It's called Analysis of Compassionate Allowances Program using a data-driven approach. I want to thank all the project team members. We have excellent team members and collaborators who are also in the audience. None of us has any relationship to disclose. I just want to give you some background about Compassionate Allowances Program. In recent years, SSA has experienced significant growth in applications for disability benefits, including SSDI and SSI. For instance, in fiscal year 2010, SSA received over 3 million initial disability applications, which is the highest number of volume that SSA has ever received in terms of claims. To improve the productivity of processing those large volume of claims, SSA decided to develop and implement some new programs and strategies and some approaches. And compassionate allowances is one of them. And this was initiated in 2008 by the current SSA Commissioner, Astro. And this program was designed to identify any medical conditions that are severe or life-threatening that are definitely and clearly meeting the statutory standard for disability benefits. So SSA decided using this approach to identify claimants with those conditions quickly. So on average, they will be able to process the decision within 20 days. It's quite different from the other regular procedures. So you probably wonder how the SSA determined those conditions. SSA received information from various sources, including public outreach hearings and information they received from Social Security and Disability Determination Service communities, including medical and scientific experts' opinions and SSA's research with NIH. And most importantly, they get information from research, medical, and advocacy groups. The original list, as you can see, there are 50 of them. When they started the program, it was 25 rare diseases and 25 cancers. And over the year, this list has been growing. And by the end of July this year, it was 100 conditions. And that include cancers, brain disorders, rare diseases, and conditions that affect children only. There's also heart disease-related conditions. And by the end of this year, there will be more conditions. That will add up to 113 conditions that include neurological disorders and some conditions affecting immune systems. And as you can see, current approach that SSA is using focus on identify potential health conditions, only include the new conditions. It doesn't have a mechanism to update the list. We know the medical advances and technology improvements can change the conditions over time. Maybe some conditions now is very severe, but over 10 years later, this condition is no longer perceived as a severe condition or life-threatening. So in order to support SSA's efforts to reduce processing time for SSDI and SSI applicants who need expedited processing, we came up with a systematic data-driven method to identify potential compassionate allowances conditions, what we call CAL. And also at the same time, we developed a method that will periodically update the CAL list. The data came from SSA disability research files from 1997 to 2006, which contained almost 30 million claims and representing about 26 million claimants. We also use SSA data matched to the National Survey Data, NHIS, and the National Death Index data for the same time frame because we want to validate the results, cross-validating purpose. Then the analytic samples include applicants who apply for SSDI and SSI benefits. But just keep in mind, this project focuses on death as a disability measure. So we compute the survival function from the time of claimant's application to death. So just keep in mind, this is our analytical framework. And then Aaron is going to present the methods and the results. And I will conclude with the strength and the limitations and next steps.
Thank you. So our method can really be seen as this three-step process. What do we want to do here? The goal is to identify these conditions that can be possible CAL conditions. And it would be nice if we could just look at a collection of conditions and say this one, this one, and this one. But as we all know, we can't do that. So we have to have particular methods to do it. So the first thing we do is we look at conditions which are similar in characteristics. And what do we mean by that? As Peishu had mentioned, we're looking at death as a measure of disability in this case. So we look at the conditions with death profiles or survival curves similar to those of the current CAL conditions. Now, of course, we can't just look at these conditions and say, well, these ones have similar profiles. Those may be chance observations. So we need to have some sort of statistical test which allows us to show that this was more than a chance observation, that these conditions we're looking at do actually have similar death characteristics. So then among these potential candidates, we come up with a ranking method in order of priority. The idea here is, given that we end up showing, say, you know, K number of conditions are similar to the CAL conditions via our test, that doesn't always mean that all K of these conditions can be put in among the other CAL conditions. So we need to have some sort of ranking, given a constraint on the number of conditions that could be accepted, which one of these conditions should be first, and so on. So how do we do this? How do you compare survival functions? So a typical survival curve looks exactly like this. We have on the y-axis, the vertical axis, our probability of survival, which will start here at about 1. Everyone initially is alive, so we know they're surviving. And then this drops down towards 0. So the idea is as time progresses, everybody's chance of survival decreases. And for many of these CAL conditions, people's chance of survival decrease quite quickly. And we see here that on many of these conditions, at 2 months, we actually get quite a few people who are have very low probability of survival. Now, suppose that we have this baseline blue CAL curve here, and we also have this yellow curve, and this is some candidate that we've determined through whatever empirical methods that this has similar death characteristics or similar survival characteristics to the CAL conditions. When we look at the two curves together, we see that this yellow curve is consistently higher. And what does that tell us? What that tells us is, given any point in time, such as 2 months right here, the probability of survival for this yellow condition is higher than the probability of survival for the blue condition. And this is a picture where we see throughout we have higher probability of survival for all points in time, and therefore what does that tell us? It tells us this condition has better odds of survival than the ones in the CAL conditions. And as Beth did in her talk, I'll be skipping through the descriptions and just describing them myself. Now we look at this alternative picture. In the alternative picture, we still have this blue baseline survival curve for the CAL conditions. But we have the second condition candidate survival curve where we fall below the blue baseline curve. So again, using the 2 month point as a reference point, we see here that the probability of survival is much lower on this condition, this candidate condition, than the CAL curves. And this exists throughout time, and in other words, this is an obvious picture of something that has worse survival rates than those of the CAL conditions themselves. It's not always that straightforward, though. Many times you get this situation. So what is this telling us? This is telling us that at some point, initially, the probability of survival was higher for our candidate condition. But as time goes on, and we see this 2 month point, we get this crossing. And this crossing tells us now at this point, the candidate condition has a much lower odds of survival. So what do we do in this case? Do we deny these people, or do we give them benefits, or do we add this to the list of CAL conditions? This is where things are not as straightforward, and this is why we end up needing our statistical test to determine whether or not the curve is truly below the CAL condition or not. So the way we deal with this is we're going to talk about a survival surface. Now, the point of the survival surface is to really tackle three issues. The idea of the crossing curves, that can happen in any situation, whether you're looking at this as a curve or a survival surface. But that still tells us what? That tells us that we need to have some sort of test. We need some way to say that, other than just looking at this, that this condition is worse off than the cal conditions, or better off. Now, there's two other things to take into account, is the fact that given a finite time window, as people enter into the study itself, the people near the end of the study have very high probability of surviving throughout the entire time of the study. So the people entering near the end, we often don't know what happens to these people, and we get a lot of censored data at the end. And given a large enough influx of people near the end of your time window, you can end up skewing your data quite heavily by comparing the end results to the beginning results of your time window. Moreover, given long enough time windows, survival rates for conditions will often change significantly. And we can take, for example, childhood leukemia, which in the 1980s had very, very bad prognosis. Today, childhood leukemia has very high odds of survival. And if we take a condition of that nature, you don't want to end up comparing at the 1980s survival times, say, to the 2010 survival times. So what the survival surface does for us, it allows us to actually use a bivariate survival, where we take into account not only the time of survival, but also the entry time into the study, or whenever our data was collected. And by doing that, we can get some discrete picture like this. So in this, what have we done? We've split this up into entry times of January, February, March, and April. And for all the individuals that enter in the respective month, we then calculate a survival curve for that month. Now, it can be seen here, as we do this for more and more months, or suppose we do this over a much larger window and scatter it throughout weeks or years or whatever you want to look at, we're going to get something that ends up filling in between the curves here. So this space will end up being filled in with more and more curves, and we'll end up getting something that eventually looks like this. So we end up with this two-dimensional surface embedded in a three-dimensional space here. And so what are we looking at? As before with the survival curves, we still have the probability of survival along your vertical axis here. But now we're going to have two axes on the horizontal plane here, one giving us survival time and one giving us application time. So if you imagine taking a slice right down any part of this curve, slicing, say, at 40 here on application time, then that would give you the survival curve, as we saw in the previous pictures, for the individuals entered at that given point in time. So then it's pretty much the same idea here. We, through calculation of a test statistic that works for the surfaces themselves instead of just looking at the curves as previously done in many studies, we can now compare survival rates over long study times and with presence of large censoring near the end, etc. And so what do we see here? We see that we have this cal reference curve, for example. This pink curve would be the survival curve describing the cal conditions themselves, whereas this one down here is some non-cal condition. And if I remember correctly, number 27 was a form of non-small cell lung cancer, if I remember correct. So what we see here is this lung cancer has much lower rates of probability throughout, from the beginning to the end of the survival window, than the cal conditions have. And this would give us a clear candidate of something to recommend. Now, conversely, we take condition 40 here, and I believe this is a renal condition. So we take this condition here, and we see a clear example of a survival surface that ends up being higher than the cal reference survival surface. So in this case, it's telling us that all points of time we have higher probability of survival than we would for the cal conditions themselves. So this is something that most likely will not be recommended. So after doing this with many conditions, we then get a pool of conditions that we recommend as being potential cal conditions. Now, to actually rank these conditions, we use a method that is independent of not only the original testing method, but also independent of any of the survival curves or any of the empirical methods that we used before. And so what we end up looking at here is we look at an average time to application and the average time to decision. And this should be 1 minus P0, if anyone noticed that. Should be that. But what does this end up giving us? When we take the ratio of the average time to decision plus the average time of application and divide it by the average time to application, that gives us the probability of not surviving the adjudication. Many of these conditions out here have a very low odds of survival even past the first year. And due to that, it makes sense that we'd want to recommend the conditions where these people have very low odds of actually even receiving a decision. So this ends up giving us a way to rank these and assign a priority to each of the conditions depending upon how likely the individual is to actually receive their decision. And after doing this, we end up getting a distribution for the likeliness or likelihood of surviving the adjudication. So this distribution tells us what? It tells us, given your condition, how does it compare to the likelihood of surviving all the or likelihood of any other condition surviving adjudication? So we then assign this into separate tiers. So tier A, this was 97.5% more likely not to survive the adjudication than the others. Now take note, we are not saying here that they are 97.5% not likely to survive the adjudication. What we're saying is when we compare to the survival probabilities of all other conditions, these people are worse off than 97.5% of them. And then B, 84. C, our average group. And then D, the people that are doing a little bit better than the other people. And then E, the people that have better odds of survival than anyone else to adjudication time. And some examples of these conditions that we see up in Part A, for example, pancreatic cancer and liver cancer. So given that someone has applied for benefits with either of these conditions, their odds of surviving the time to decision is going to be 97.5% worse off than the rest of the other conditions out there, and so on. And then, as I mentioned before, childhood leukemia, we get down to something that they have very high odds of survival these days, and that's a good thing, but we need to be concerned really with the ones at the high end as an order of urgency of who needs to be on the CAL list first. And some results that we got using this method, an idea of the ranking. So this is a list of the top five conditions. So we see that some of these have very, very low odds of survival. What the star implied in this, the star told us that number one, this got picked up by the initial test, and then we assigned a ranking to it. So the idea was we wanted to assign a ranking to all conditions out there, not just the ones that got picked up by the test. It's an idea that perhaps the test may miss something, and this would give us another way to see it just as a safety check. Turns out that really wasn't as large of a concern, but it ended up working out as we wanted it to. And so these conditions, all pretty deadly conditions, and they ended up being the top five ones to recommend. So, and thank you, back to the show.
I'll quickly conclude with the limitations and the strengths of the study. As you know, we got the best data we ever can have, but then there are some limitations as expected. We couldn't identify all the 88 CAL conditions as expected because when we started this project, the data we received was prior to the implication of the CAL program. So we tried to use different codings to identify the CAL conditions, but we only can certain 24 of them had exact matched listing codes. So that's the first limitation. And we understand if we add more CAL conditions to the project, and then the survival curve will change. The Aaron just present the survival service will change. Because those conditions are different from the 24 conditions. And we didn't have the chance to study the overlapping situation across all the CAL conditions and all other expedited programs because of data limitations. Our focus of this project is death as a measure for disability. We know there are other measures such as functional loss we should focus, and then we will address that in the next project. Since we use large volume of data and observations, more than millions, so then we are able to identify some conditions, but that means we need a large volume of data in order to identify rare conditions. In terms of strength, this method allowed us to do a consistent and periodic updating the count list, and also allowed us to identify rare conditions given the fact we have a large volume of data. Then some conditions that SSA may not identify through the normal channels, such as hearings, advocacy, testimonies, and experts' opinions. And because we take into about the time, over time, the conditions may change because of the advances in medical treatment and technology. So we are able to detect some changes in survival functions. And the ranking also allowed us to identify some rare but life-threatening conditions, but that cannot pass our statistical test because of small sample size. In terms of future work, we would like to use the most recent data in order for us to identify all 100 conditions on the list. And using the most recent administrative data, so we can identify the CAL conditions and then also compare the CAL programs with the other expedited programs, and using functional information. Again, we will use data that will address functional loss instead of just death. And some other work is needed to understand how frequent we should update the CAL list. So with that, I would give the floor to Doc. Okay.
Thank you, Ishu and Aaron.